Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week was born in Germany, grew up in Greenville, Michigan, and earned a bachelor's degree in history from the University of Michigan and a law degree from Seattle University. From 1987 to 2019, she was executive vice president, general counsel, and secretary of Letica Corporation, which was a plastic packaging company that manufactures containers for the food, chemical, and paint industry. Since 2020, she's been a senior lawyer for Bodman PLC, focusing on commercial litigation. Her name? Mara Letica Saab. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're with a special guest, somebody that everybody that knows her admires her, Mara Letica Saab. Mara, welcome, an honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack.
Can we start by talking about Dad, who grew up in Croatia? Talk about his childhood and then how he got to Germany.
Well, throughout the world, the United States is always a magnet for those who want to better themselves. And even in communist Yugoslavia, which it was at the time that he lived there, he always wanted to come to the United States as a young boy. He always knew he would never join the Communist Party. And even though the communists took him from his home at age 14, sent him away to school hundreds of miles away from his village, it's from there that he decided that he would escape communism and walk to Austria. And that's what he did.
And then he met a young lady in Germany.
That's true. So in Austria, Caritas, which is a Catholic charitable organization, helped him out because he arrived penniless, on foot. And so they gave him enough money. He, believe it or not, joined the French Foreign Legion to get a train ticket to Paris. As it went through Germany, he jumped off it, and he decided, I'm not going to be in the French Foreign Legion. I'm going to make my way to the United States. So he, in Frankfurt, he jumped off the train, AWOLT, and went and found the United States Army base, and that's where he got his first job.
How did he meet Mom?
He met Mom in night school. They were both wanting to learn English, and that's where they met.
All right, and then they had a daughter.
Yes, they did.
Named Mara. And that was, okay, a year later, you all moved to Canada for a few years, and then you moved to Michigan, Greenville, Michigan.
Correct.
Near Grand Rapids, I believe.
Correct.
Why Greenville?
So we were in Canada for about 4 years, and because that was the easiest place to get a visa. And my dad was applying. In those days, you had to have a sponsor or a job to get a visa to the United States. So he applied for jobs. He was offered a job with Ford Motor Company or with this small tool and die shop in Greenville, Michigan. And my dad said he wanted to really learn a business, and he wanted to be in an environment where he could learn everything, and that would not be in Ford Motor Company. That's just too big. He thought he'd be one of 1 million people, so he decided to take the smaller environment.
Speaking about learning, Mara, what's the biggest thing you've learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
The biggest thing I learned from my mother was to be a strong, independent woman. She always really focused on that theme with her daughters. And from my dad, I learned so many things. I got my faith from my dad. He was a very devout Catholic when we were growing up. Took us all to church. We always had priests over. And he was a man of faith his whole life. The second thing I learned was my toughness. And I am tough.
Well, you have steel and velvet.
I hope so. I'm not sure, so sure about the velvet.
Henry,
yes.
At the right time, steel, and right times velvet. Okay. Where did you get your love for law?
Oh, that's my dad. Actually, I forgot about that. That's a gift he gave me because when I was little, he always said I could talk anyone's ear off, and therefore I had to be a lawyer. And so I think from age four on, he just basically drove that thought into my brain that I was going to be a lawyer.
Dennis Archer once told me, I quote him, "The practice of law, it's a calling."
My husband Henry would feel that way. I didn't really feel that way. I'm more transactional. For me, it was a really good skill set to have, no matter what I did. And when my dad said, "You're going to law school," I pretty much did what my dad said.
Hmm. All right, from 81 to 87, you were an attorney for Bullivant, Hauser, and Bailey. Talk about that chapter of your life.
Yeah, just a slight segue. Before that, I was with the Seattle prosecutor's office, and so that's where I got my love of litigation, and that translated over to Bullivant, Hauser, Bailey. And I did love litigating, loved it. Enjoyed my partners, enjoyed litigating. We were a defense firm, so that's what I did, and I did fall in love with that part.
We're talking to Mara Letta-Cassad. Mara, what do all great lawyers have in common?
Integrity, the great ones, the good ones.
Please.
Unfortunately, our profession, like many other professions, is lacking in that arena. I wish we could refocus on that. Integrity is so important. I think you lose the heft and the meaning of the legal system if you don't have integrity and a commitment to really abiding by the law.
You practice law, you've used law for 40 plus years. What has this taught you about people?
Oh, like any other component of life, there are those. I had a ride with an Uber driver today, and a nice woman, and we both agreed. We put people in two buckets, good people, bad people. Good people tell the truth, they're honest, they treat each other well. Bad people, they're not so good, they don't treat others well, and they don't have any integrity. So everything else, we're like birds. We have lots of feathers, lots of colors, lots of permutations, big ones, small ones, all kinds. But in essence, there's only two types of people.
We're talking to Mara Letta-Cassad, who's definitely in the good people bucket.
I try.
Amen. And I'm Jack Priscilla, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula. We're with Mara Letta-Cassad, who was born in Germany. Family took her to Canada, then to Michigan. And the rest is history. All right, your dad, mom and dad, outside Grand Rapids, and they meet a man named Mr. Lewis.
Mr. Lewis was the job that I was referring to that my father was offered. And he had a small tool and die shop in Greenville, Michigan. And he was really a professor to my dad in that sense. Professor, mentor. I hesitate on the mentor only because my dad is a very independent thinker. And so Mr. Lewis was a great American, believed in everyone becoming involved in politics. He took my dad to his first political meeting. It happened to be with the Democrats. And they kept using the term brother. Hi, brother. Hi. And my dad said, geez, this sounds a lot like communism. I don't think this is the party for me, Mr. Lewis. And so the next political event he went to was for the Republicans. And he said, yeah, this is more my thinking. Freedom, small government. I don't want the government involved in everything I say and do, which is what the communists did. And so he shied away from one party, went to the other. And Mr. Lewis was really very open to that, by the way, in those days. He understood that. He just wanted my dad to be involved. He said, Ilya, you pick what you want to do, but I'm glad you're doing it.
All right. In 1967, Ilya Letica starts a business. What did it do?
Well, he started a tool and die corporation, and how he got into the packaging industry was one of his customers had ordered a large 5-gallon plastic injection molding tooling, which my dad built, and then the customer defaulted on it. So my dad said, what am I going to do with this thing? And so he found a fabricator, said, can I put this in your press and let me make a few parts and see if I can sell them myself. I'll see what I can do. And that was the start of the container industry.
And then God combined that with some pickles, I believe.
Yes.
And the rest is history.
So he tried selling them retail. That didn't work. And then he noticed that pickles were in metal containers and they were rusty, dented. And my dad said, you know, I think I'll just go to these pickle packers. And I don't know
if people... Easy for you to say, Ma.
Pickle packers. I don't know if people in Michigan know this, but the Thumb region is a great pickle industry region. So my dad went up there and met a few families. One of the families that comes to mind are the Safies. They are a wonderful family in the Thumb area. And he got his first order, and so my dad made them, and they converted. They said, this is great. And he made them a bright Kelly green for pickles. And that was the start of that.
Speaking of converting, in 1987, Dad convinces you to come and join the family business.
Yes, he does.
How so?
I don't know. I do whatever my dad tells me. I was an easy sell. I didn't really ever think I was going to join that business.
And you guys made plastic containers from 1 gallon up to 7 gallons.
Yeah, we did even smaller. We did yogurt cups, cottage cheese cups. We had what was called a thin wall division. So they make smaller plastic injection molded containers. Then we made the larger ones.
What were you making, 100 a day?
Millions. Then we got into the paper converting business. So we made paper cups and we sold to 7-Eleven, Burger King, McDonald's. We had all over, Dunkin' Donuts, hot cups, cold cups.
All right. Dad had over 50 patents credited to him. Can you share with us 2 or 3 of those patents?
Yeah. My dad was a real visionary. And the patent, one of the patents was the pickle container. I mean, that was a big deal. And primarily it was the locking mechanism for the lid, because those have to be sealed airtight for food products. And so it was, he was an engineer at heart and also a salesman at heart. He had a great combination. So he did that. And with the smaller containers, those were hard to injection mold back in those days, the small cottage cheese, yogurt cups, but he had a patent on those so that they sealed appropriately and what have you. So I would credit him really, rather than a patent, one of his biggest, I think, ideas was he converted the paper cup industry, believe it or not. Solo Sweetheart dominated that industry, but my dad noticed that it was still wax paper. I don't know if you remember, you could take your fingernail down the side of paper cups and the wax would come on. And my dad thought, well, that's kind of old. They were kind of like the auto industry. Remember when the Japanese took over?
Yeah.
Same thing with the cup industry. The Americans had it. They didn't reinvest in it. It just was doing the same thing for a long time. And my dad went to Japan and found the latest and greatest printing presses. They're huge, mammoth pieces of equipment. But they could print on a type of paper, poly-coated paper. And my dad said, you know what? We're going to convert this industry. And that's what he did. People thought he was nuts. They said, why are you going into a saturated market? Paper cups, everyone makes paper cups, Solo, Sweetheart, what have you. And he said, no, they're doing it the old way. We're going to do it the new way.
Dad was a Horatio Alger story, a visionary, a genius, very firm in his beliefs. You also, the acorn doesn't fall far from the tree, Mara. When you disagreed with Dad, did he ever fire you?
Oh, yeah. I can think of one instance in particular. This is a funny story. He came into my office, and we were doing business. And I won't name the name, but a pretty big guy. He was a former governor of one of the states in the union. Anyways, and my dad came in and said, I want to have a manufacturer's rep agreement with him, and he wants whatever he makes in perpetuity. I said, I'm not going to do that. He said, what do you mean? No, I'm not going to do that. What do you mean in perpetuity? Like forever? And he says, yeah. I said, no. That's ridiculous, Dad. So my dad said, you're fired. I said, okay, fine, but I'm not doing it. He leaves the office. He comes and he goes on his merry way, but he never signs an agreement. The man dies not a year later. And his son comes in and says, I get his money. My dad said, what are you talking about? No, I get his money. My dad says, well, you're not doing anything. So my dad comes to me and says, remember that agreement we were talking about? I said, you didn't sign one, did you? Because I didn't do it. Anyways, we resolved that very well. But yes, he did fire me.
All right. We're talking to Maraletta Kassad, who, if the truth be known, was the wind beneath the wings of Dad in that business. 2017, you guys sell the family business. That was a family to you. Talk about that, selling the family.
I think that was a very, very difficult decision for my dad. But it was a practical necessity because we really didn't have anyone in the pipeline to take it over. He hadn't really groomed anyone. I could have lasted a while, so could my brother, but not very long. We're old. My dad was 20 when he had me. So we knew it was an inevitability, and I kind of wanted my dad to enjoy it, too. So I was a proponent of that earlier than my brother and my dad were ready for it. And finally, in 2017, they said, yeah, we get it. We understand, and so that's what we did. It was hard. It was very difficult.
We're talking to Maraletta Kassad. When we come back, we're going to ask her about the fourth commandment. If you don't know what it is, look it up via Google during the commercial. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Crisula. We're with Maraletta Kassad. Mara, the fourth commandment. Honor your mother and your father. We've known each other a long time. On a scale of 1 to 10, You're a 20 regarding that commandment. You adored your mom and dad. And they both got, whether it was Alzheimer's, mini strokes, dementia, they broke down. Every day you would go and spend an hour to 3 hours just sitting. Mom and dad didn't know who she was. Why?
I wasn't always that good. I mean, when in my younger years, I probably was a pain in the you-know-what, according to both my mom and dad. But again, my dad gave me that faith, and I do believe in the commandments. But that's not really, maybe that's what drove me. But I think if you have faith, you know that you can never give as much as you've gotten from your parents, ever. I mean, and it really wasn't a duty in the sense that it was difficult. I mean, it was the easiest thing in the world for me to do. And it was the greatest gift, I think, that God ever gave me.
Dad didn't even know who you were.
I don't know about that, Jack. I kind of think that someplace, somehow, there's another level of being, whether it's your spirit, your soul, what have you. But there were times that both my mom and dad would take my hand and just squeeze it, and I just chose to believe that they still knew it was me.
A listener tonight who has a mom or dad with dementia, whatever, the patience you need is unbelievable. What do you say to that listener?
I just hope that they have it in their heart and to pray, to just pray and thank God for such a blessing, because it makes you, I definitely know that I received a lot more than I gave during those days. I got to sit with my mom and dad, which for years we were so busy running a business, having children, living our lives. It was really a beautiful time to spend with them. And just being together. And we would, sometimes we'd pray together, sometimes we would just listen to music. I love, my mom and dad both loved music. I love music, so I would just play music. Sometimes I would break down and cry. I mean, it was no doubt about it. Sometimes it was like heart-wrenching. But in the end, it was a long, long goodbye. But what a beautiful way to have your last years. I think I had them for 3.5 years, 4 years. It was beautiful.
All right. Another listener. Mara, I admire you. I have a mom. I have a dad in that condition. I don't ever go to see them because it breaks my heart to see them that way. It breaks my heart.
I understand. I don't know what to tell that person. I think if they can just not make it about them and take that part away and pray, I mean, prayer is a powerful tool to give you the strength to just be by their side and just hold their hand. They need you. It's like a baby. They need you. They can't do anything for themselves. And to be able to get over yourself and give of yourself, that's the greatest gift you can give your mom and dad, is of yourself. Put yourself aside, your feelings, all of that. I get it. Sometimes it broke my heart, but in the end, it was a gift.
We lost Dad on March 2nd, 2025. Mitch Albom told me once that all a loved one wants, they don't care about the stock portfolio and the clothes and the trophies and all that stuff. They just want loved ones around them. What I found being with my mom and dad when they both passed, I think the loved ones get more out of it being there than the one passing. Talk about that.
I agree. At least in my circumstance, because both my mom and dad were in hospice, and in order to make sure they didn't undergo any pain, because it's very painful when you're suffocating. I mean, basically, that's what you're doing, right? You can't breathe, and you're breathing because more and more shallow, and you just don't want them to have a panic, or because the brain still can panic. So they were under a lot of morphine at that point when they really passed. And I think you're right, being there. For my mom, I remember I just couldn't let go of her. It was just, I was holding her. My sister finally turned to me and said, "Mara, that's kind of grossing me out. Could you let go, Mom?" I said, "Okay." I didn't mean it to. She just seemed so beautiful to me. I just enjoy, because I knew I would never get that chance again. I knew that. And it was hard for me to let go of her.
All listeners, tonight, in the car, I've disowned my mom or dad. They did me bad. What do you say to that person?
I'm going to pray for that person, because a lot of people have very difficult childhoods, and things are not all good. In fact, some people have horrid childhoods. And if that's the case, I'm just going to pray for them. I pray primarily that they can forgive their parents in their hearts. Forgiveness is so important to your own well-being. And Jesus was big in terms of forgiveness.
Jesus is forgiveness.
He
right?
is forgiveness. And it took me a long time to really fully comprehend what that means. Complete forgiveness is complete love. And it's not that you don't still have pain. I mean, and Jesus says that. You still will have pain. Pain consumes the world. But if you can see it in your heart to forgive, you will rise above that. And that's the only way to rise above it. Otherwise, I think you're very much hurt the rest of your life, and that hurt comes out and manifests itself in a lot of bad ways. So it's really good to, if you can, I'm going to pray for that person.
When we come back, we're going to ask Mara Letic-Assad about Croatia. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Krasula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble."
The great Ernie Harwell.
"My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God."
And the voices of our generation.
"I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis."
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything.
Home. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Mara Letic-Assad. Mara, Croatia. You love your mom and dad. And ma'am, you love Croatia. Tell us about Croatia.
Well, there's another gift.
Sounds like a special kind of pickle, I think, maybe, in a way.
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that. I'll get to that in a second. But so there's another gift my dad gave me, a gift of love for his home country. And my dad was involved all his life in the independence movement for Croatia. It wasn't recent. And he always believed that one day communism would fall. And in 1989, when the Berlin Wall came down, my dad actually came into my office and said, Mara, we're going to see an independent movement in Croatia now. Croatia will be free. I thought, okay. And I, sure enough, the following year, there was a huge movement in Croatia for independence, as well as Slovenia, Montenegro, Kosovo. So it's interesting how we got involved. My dad just thought I was a natural partner in this, and we created an organization called the Croatian American Association and utilized that as a way to educate Congress and whomever that what was about to happen in Yugoslavia. Interestingly, I actually went, I've been to Croatia, I don't know, 50 times or more during that period of time. And when I went to the consulate in Zagreb, Zagreb's the capital of Croatia, one of the members, the staff members that I met with said, oh, there'll never be independence for these regions. They don't even know who they are. And I thought, good golly molly, these people are ignorant. They have no idea. They've been in country all these years, and they have no idea what's happening on ground. It astounded me, because it was so evident to me that the Croatians were going to seek their independence, and so were the Slovenians and everybody else. No one liked this artificial communist association at all. So, and sure enough, we met with the future leaders of the independent Croatia. Tudjman was running for president, Gojko Šušak, a lot of people. And we just got a huge coalition. You know, I don't know if you know this, Jack, but Mike Timmis actually helped my dad in this too, through the prayer group. And they met with leaders all over the world trying to get recognition for Croatia. And when they had their first elections, I put together lawyers for independence that went over there and monitored the first free elections in Croatia for independence.
All right. You mentioned that Dad thought you were a natural partner. There was another man that thought you'd be a natural partner, and that was President George H.W. Bush. He nominated you to be ambassador to Croatia.
That's true. 1992.
You didn't get confirmed.
He lost the election.
That's tall cotton.
Oh. Well, I had a lot of people rooting for me at that time and who made that happen, actually. Because the 2 years that I'd been working over there, I had people on both sides of the aisle. I actually had gone to Croatia and Bosnia with Congressman Charlie Wilson. I don't know if you're familiar with him. Charlie Wilson went to Afghanistan, that Charlie Wilson, and we went to Croatia together when they were bombing Sarajevo. Charlie Wilson, we were supposed to go to Sarajevo. It's being bombed. I finally worked with the Minister of Defense to get a plane there. We're sitting in the Zagreb airport. We'd already gone by car to Mostar, and I tell Charlie, I say, hey, Charlie, I got a car, I got a plane, military escort, to go to Sarajevo. We can go. He said, darling, I'm not going to Sarajevo, but Charlie, this is why we came all this way, to go to Sarajevo. Darling, I got me a filly in London. I ain't going to Sarajevo. I'm going to London. And that was my Charlie Wilson story.
All right.
Oh, politics.
I quote you now. You were talking to me once about Croatia and Croatian. A lot of young Americans of Croatian descent went and helped. But you said a term, freedom fighter light, that you were a freedom fighter light.
The reason I say that is because I wasn't on the ground wearing a flak vest and with the Army. There are a lot of, some of these, we put together the Foreign Press Bureau, and I did that with the help of Lynn Nofziger, who was the former press secretary for President Reagan, and he helped me put this together. And these were young people from all over the globe who came to Croatia to become interpreters for the media, because the Yugoslav National Army at that time had taken Seoul. You had to go through the JNA in order to get to the front. So we offered them an alternative, and that was the Foreign Press Bureau. And these young people had to get trained, and they would take the press to the front. These, I lost some friends that way. They actually died. So to me, that's a whole different level.
We're talking to Mara Levick-Assad. Mara, there's a young kid running for mayor in New York City, Zoran Mamdani. That's the talk of the town. And the one side, this guy says, this guy's a Marxist, a communist, a socialist. But he's saying, I'll give everybody free child care, health care, no rent increase, okay? Give like Santa Claus. Sounds pretty good to me, Mara.
So Margaret Thatcher said, socialism sounds good until you run out of other people's money. It's always easy to give away other people's money, the taxpayers. And those taxpayers are your firemen, your policemen, your electrician, your plumber, all those people who go to work every day and fill the coffers. And it's not his to give away. And it's not free. Nothing's free. Freedom's not free. It costs a lot to have freedom.
10-15% of the people voted in the primary. The Zoran didn't win because poor people voted for him. They were the educated, wealthy people in the West End of New York City. How do you explain that?
I like that term, educated. It doesn't mean you're not ignorant. So ignorance is pervasive these days. And the will to not know is massive. I mean, if you only look at the facts, you'd never think the way those people are thinking. And I think there are other forces at work. I truly do. I don't think this is an isolated event. I don't think this guy popped up organically from nothing to all of a sudden having a machine behind him.
We've been talking to Mara Levick-Assad. She's a lot of things. And the acorn doesn't fall far from the tree. And she's an awful lot like the dad that she loved. So thanks for all you do for so much. You and Henry, all the good you're doing here in Michigan, Naples, etc. Fantastic. Keep up the great, great work.
Thanks, Jack.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.
Believe in yourself.